October 29, 2018, Lion Air Flight 610 climbs out of Jakarta on a clear morning. 13 minutes later, the Boeing 737 MAX 8 strikes the Java Sea at high speed. 189 people gone. This is ATIS on Radio Hangar, I'm Tower. That crash, followed by a second one 5 months later in Ethiopia, killed 346 people, grounded the MAX worldwide, and eventually produced criminal charges against one of the largest aircraft manufacturers on the planet. This week, a victim compensation fund worth $444.5 million is finally set to begin paying out. Let's talk about what happened, how we got here, and what it still means for the people who fly. Today's broadcast is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com, March 10th, 2019, Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 departs Addis Ababa, the Boeing 737 MAX 8. They're flying as a different airplane from a different airline on a different continent, but 6 minutes after departure, it strikes terrain southeast of the airport. 157 people gone, 346 people total, two crews, two airlines, one airplane, one flight control system. That system was called the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System, or MCAS. And if you followed the MAX story at all, you know that name. But the details of how MCAS ended up on those aircraft and why those pilots didn't know how to handle it are worth going through carefully, because this isn't just history. It's a lesson in how decisions made in an engineering office or a certification meeting eventually show up in the front seat. The Boeing 737 MAX was designed around a new, larger, more fuel-efficient engine, the CFM LEAP series. Those engines were significantly bigger than the ones on earlier 737 models. To fit them under a wing that hadn't been redesigned for them, engineers moved the engines forward and higher on the fuselage. That repositioning changed how the aircraft handled under certain flight conditions. Specifically, it caused the nose to pitch up more aggressively at high angles of attack and low speeds. Boeing's answer was MCAS. The system was designed to push the nose down automatically when it sensed the aircraft approaching those handling characteristics. The goal was to make the MAX feel like earlier 737 variants, so airline customers could put their pilots through a minimal transition course rather than a full new type rating. That training efficiency was a major commercial selling point. Here is where the design broke. MCAS relied on a single angle of attack sensor, just one on a jet with two installed. If that one sensor gave erroneous data, MCAS would activate and push the nose down repeatedly, with enough force to overpower the crew's manual inputs on the control column. The system was designed to reset and reactivate every 5 seconds as long as the erroneous input persisted. That's what both crews faced. On the Lion Air flight, the angle of attack sensor was providing false data from the moment the aircraft left the gate. The crew had never been told MCAS existed. It wasn't in the flight manual they had trained on. Boeing and the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, had jointly decided the system didn't require specific crew training or prominent documentation because it was classified as a handling aid rather than a primary flight control. The accident investigation later established that the crew on the previous Lion Air flight on that same aircraft had encountered a similar MCAS activation and managed to control it. That information was not clearly communicated to the crew of Flight 610. They fought the system for 13 minutes before impact. The Ethiopian Airlines crew knew slightly more by the time of their flight. Boeing had issued an emergency airworthiness directive following the Lion Air crash. But the guidance fell short of giving crews the full picture of what they were dealing with. The Ethiopian crew attempted the recommended procedure. It did not save the aircraft. After the second crash, regulators around the world grounded the 737 MAX. The FAA waited 3 days after the Ethiopian accident before issuing its own grounding order. After aviation authorities in Europe, China, Canada, and Australia had already acted. That timing drew significant criticism and became a central focus of congressional oversight hearings in the months that followed. The grounding lasted 20 months in the United States. The MAX returned to service here in November 2020 after Boeing redesigned MCAS to use inputs from both angle of attack sensors, added a new disagree alert to warn crews when those sensors gave different readings, and revised training requirements to include MCAS specifically. The criminal and legal process moved on a different timeline entirely. In 2021, the Department of Justice and Boeing reached a deferred prosecution agreement. Boeing admitted that two of its employees had deceived the FAA during the certification process. The company agreed to pay $2.5 billion, which included a $237 million fund for the victims' families. In exchange, the department agreed not to prosecute Boeing criminally as long as the company met the terms of the agreement. 3 years later, the Justice Department concluded that Boeing had violated those terms. The specific allegations centered on whether Boeing had implemented required compliance and ethics reforms. Boeing disputed that finding, but ultimately, rather than contest the breach determination in court, the company negotiated a new resolution. In 2024, Boeing entered a guilty plea on one count of conspiracy to defraud the United States. The $444.5 million fund now moving toward payment is part of that plea agreement. Under federal law, that amount is structured as restitution to the estates of the 346 people killed. The families of the victims have said publicly for years that the agreements Boeing reached with the government undervalued the criminal nature of what happened and shielded executives from personal accountability. Boeing has not faced individual criminal charges against its leadership in connection with the MAX accidents. Many of the family's attorneys have argued that the original deferred prosecution agreement essentially allowed the company to buy its way through accountability without anyone in senior leadership facing personal criminal exposure. What the $444.5 million represents is the criminal restitution component. The total financial exposure Boeing has faced in connection with the MAX is vastly larger. Civil settlements with families, the cost of the grounding, recertification expenses, lost orders, compensation to airlines, and reputational damage to the program have cost the company tens of billions of dollars. The 737 MAX program, which was supposed to be Boeing's primary near-term revenue driver, became one of the most expensive product crises in commercial aviation history. The MAX is flying today. Dozens of airlines around the world operate it. The redesigned MCAS has a fundamentally different safety architecture than the original training. Now includes MCAS, the FAA has also overhauled portions of its certification oversight process, reducing the degree to which manufacturers can self-certify certain aspects of new aircraft designs. In January 2024, a door plug separated from an Alaska Airlines 737 MAX 9 during a flight at roughly 16,000 feet. No one was killed, but the fuselage panel had not been properly secured during assembly. That incident brought Boeing back before Congress and back under intensive FAA scrutiny. It raised hard questions about whether the manufacturing and quality culture problems that contributed to the MAX accidents had been fully addressed in the years since the grounding ended. The door plug failure and the MAX crashes are not the same kind of failure. One was a design and certification problem deliberately kept from the people who needed to know about it. The other was a manufacturing and assembly quality breakdown. But aviation safety researchers have pointed to a common thread in Boeing's recent history, the gap between what the company says it does and what the physical evidence shows it does. That gap is what regulators in the industry are still working to close. Now, let me bring this back to the people listening. The pilots on Lion Air 610 and Ethiopian 302 were not incompetent. They were not victims of bad luck in the conventional sense. They were placed in an aircraft with a single-sensor flight control system that had enough authority to override their manual inputs that had been deliberately kept out of their training syllabus and that activated based on faulty data from the moment one of those flights started its takeoff roll. That is a systems failure that extends well beyond the crew seats. For those of us who fly, the takeaway is not to distrust automation. The takeaway is this: know your aircraft systems, including the ones that seem routine or invisible. Know what your autopilot does when it disagrees with your inputs. Know the procedure for a runaway trim condition on your specific airplane, and know how quickly you can disconnect it. Automation in general aviation is evolving fast. Auto throttles, envelope protection, electronic stability augmentation on light aircraft. These are becoming common across the fleet. They make flying safer in the vast majority of cases. But they also create dependency, and dependency without understanding is where things go wrong. The 737 MAX story is an extreme example from the far end of the aviation spectrum, but the lesson belongs in every cockpit. The automation is not the problem. The blind trust is. Today's reporting comes from AVWeb. Full coverage at RadioHangar.com, 346 people, 6 years. The payments are finally starting. I'm Tower. Safe flying.